18.
Hardly anyone came down for breakfast in Rudbeck, but breakfast in bed was not in Thorby's training. He ate alone in the garden, luxuriating in hot mountain sunshine and lush tropical flowers while enjoying the snowy wonderland around him. Snow fascinated him. He had never dreamed that anything could be so beautiful. But the following morning, Weemsby came into the garden only moments after Thorby sat down. A chair was placed under Weemsby. A servant quickly laid a place. He said,
"Just coffee. Good morning, Thor."
"Good morning, Uncle Jack."
"Well, did you get your studying done?"
"Sir?" "Oh, yes. I fell asleep reading." Weemsby smiled.
"Lawyerese is soporific, huh? Did you satisfy yourself that I had told you correctly what they contained?"
I think so."
"Good."
Weemsby put down his coffee and said to a servant,
"Hand me a house phone. Thor, you irritated me last night."
"I'm sorry, sir."
"But I realize you were right. You should read what you sign."
"I wish I had time to." "I had to accept the word of my staff in routine matters, or I would never have time for policy. And I assumed that you would do the same with me. But caution is commendable."
He spoke into the phone.
"Carter, fetch those papers from Rudbeck's apartment. The garden."
Thorby wondered if Carter could find the stuff. There was a safe in his study, but he had not learned to use it, so he had hidden the papers behind books. He started to mention it, but Uncle Jack was talking.
"Here is something you will want to see. An inventory of real property you own, or will own, when the wills are settled. These holdings are unconnected with the business."
Thorby looked through it with amazement. Did he really own an island named Pitcairn, at 15-something south and 130 west, whatever that meant? A dome home on Mars? A shooting lodge in Yukon? Where was Yukon, and why shoot there? You ought to be in free space to risk shooting. And what were all these other things? He looked for one item. "Uncle Jack, how about Rudbeck?"
"Eh? You're sitting on it."
"Yes, but do I own it? Lita said I did."
"Well, yes, but it's entailed. That means your great-great-grandfather decided that it should never be sold, so that there would always be a Rudbeck at Rudbeck."
"Oh.
I thought you might enjoy looking over your properties. I've ordered a car set aside for you. Is that one we hopped here in satisfactory?"
"What? Oh, goodness, yes." Thorby blinked.
"Good. It was your mother's, and I've been too sentimental to dispose of it. But it has all the latest improvements added. You might persuade Lita to hop with you. She is familiar with most of that list. Take some young friends along and make a picnic of it. As long as you like. We can find a congenial chaperone."
Thorby put the list down. "I probably will, Uncle Jack, presently, but I ought to get to work."
"Eh?
How long does it take to learn to be a lawyer here?" Weemsby's face cleared.
"I see."
"Lawyers' quaint notions of language could shock a man. It takes 4 to 5 years."
"It does?
The thing for you is 2 or 3 years at Harvard or some other good school of business."
"I need that?"
"Definitely."
You know more about it than I do."
"I should. By now."
"But couldn't I learn something about the business before I go to school? I haven't any idea what it is."
"Plenty of time."
"But I want to learn now." Weemsby started to cloud, then smiled and shrugged.
"Thor, you have your mother's stubbornness. All right. I'll order a suite for you at the main office in Rudbeck City, and staff it with people to help you. But I warn you, it won't be fun. Nobody owns a business. The business owns him. You're a slave to it."
"Well, I ought to try."
"Commendable spirit."
The phone by Weemsby's cup blinked. He picked it up, frowned, and said,
"Hold on."
He turned to Thorby.
"That idiot can't find those papers."
"I meant to tell you, I hid them. I didn't want to leave them out.
I see. Where are they?
I'll have to dig them out. Wingsby said in the phone,
"Forget it."
He tossed the phone to a servant and said to Thorby,
"Then fetch them, if you don't mind."
Thorby did mind. So far he had had 4 bites. It annoyed him to be told to run an errand while eating. Besides, was he Rudbeck of Rudbeck, or still messenger for the weapons officer? "I'll be going up after breakfast." Uncle Jack looked vexed, but he answered,
"I beg your pardon. If you can't tear yourself away, would you please tell me where to find them? I have a hard day ahead, and I would like to dispose of this triviality and go to work, if you don't mind."
Thorby wiped his mouth. "I would rather not," he said slowly. "Sign them now."
"What? You told me that you had satisfied yourself."
"No, sir. I told you that I had read them, but I don't understand them. Uncle Jack, where are the papers that my parents signed?"
"Eh?"
Wingsby looked at him sharply.
"Why?"
"I want to see them." Wingsby considered.
"They must be in the vault in Rudbeck City."
"All right, I'll go there."
Wingsby suddenly stood up. "If you will excuse me, I'll go to work," he snapped. "Young man, someday you will realize what I have done for you. In the meantime, since you choose to be uncooperative, I still must get on with my duties."
He left abruptly. Thorby felt hurt. He didn't want to be uncooperative. But if they had waited for years, why couldn't they wait a little longer and give him a chance?
He recovered the papers, then phoned Lita. She answered, with vision switched off.
"Thor, dear, what are you doing up in the middle of the night?"
He explained that he wanted to go to the family's business offices. "I thought maybe you could direct me."
"You say, Daddy said to?"
"He's going to assign me an office."
I won't just direct you, I'll take you.
But give a girl a chance to get a face on and swallow orange juice." He discovered that Rudbeck was connected with their offices in Rudbeck City by high-speed sliding tunnel. They arrived in a private foyer guarded by an elderly receptionist. She looked up.
"Hello, Miss Lita. How nice to see you."
"You too, Aggie. Will you tell Daddy we're here?"
"Of course."
She looked at Thorby. "Oh," Lita said. "I forgot. This is Rudbeck of Rudbeck." Aggie jumped to her feet.
"Oh, dear me, I didn't know. I'm sorry, sir."
Things happened quickly. In minutes, Thorby found himself with an office of quiet magnificence, with a quietly magnificent secretary who addressed him by his double-barreled title but expected him to call her Dolores.
There seemed to be unlimited genies ready to spring out of walls at a touch of her finger.
Lita stuck with him until he was installed, then said, "I'll run along, since you insist on being a dull old businessman." She looked at Dolores. "Or will it be dull? Perhaps I should stay." But she left. Thorby was intoxicated with being immensely wealthy and powerful. Top executives called him Rudbeck. Junior executives called him Rudbeck of Rudbeck. And those still more junior crowded their words with sirs. He could judge status by how he was addressed. While he was not yet active in business, he saw Wingsby rarely and Judge Bruder almost never, anything he wanted appeared quickly. A word to Dolores, and a respectful young man popped in to explain legal matters. Another word, and an operator appeared to show moving stereo color of business interests anywhere, even on other planets. He spent days looking at such pictures, yet still did not see them all. His office became so swamped with books, spools, charts, brochures, presentations, file jackets, and figures that Dolores had the office next door refitted as a library. There were figures on figures, describing in fiscal analog enterprises too vast to comprehend otherwise. There were so many figures, so intricately related, that his head ached. He began to have misgivings about the vocation of tycoon. It wasn't all just being treated with respect, going through doors first, and always getting what you ask for. What was the point, if you were so snowed under that you could not enjoy it? Being a guardsman was easier. Still, it was nice to be important. Most of his life he had been nobody, and at best he had been very junior. If only Pop could see him now, surrounded by lavish furnishings, a barber to trim his hair while he worked. Pop used to cut it under a bowl, a secretary to anticipate his wishes, and dozens of people eager to help. But Pop's face in this dream was wearing Pop's reproving expression. Phoebe wondered what he had done wrong, and dug harder into the mess of figures. Eventually, a pattern began to emerge. The business was Rudbeck and Associates Limited. So far as Thorby could tell, this firm did nothing. It was chartered as a private investment trust and just owned things. Most of what Thorby would own, when his parents' wills were proved, was stock in this company. Nor would he own it all. He felt almost poverty-stricken when he discovered that mother and father together held only 18% of many thousands' shares. Then he found out about voting and non-voting. The shares coming to him were 18/40ths of the voting shares. The remainder was split between relatives and non-relatives. Rudbeck and Associates owned stock in other companies, and here it got complicated. Galactic Enterprises, Galactic Acceptance Corporation, Galactic Transport, Interstellar Metals, Three Planets Fiscal, which operated on 27 planets, Havermeyer Laboratories, which ran barge lines and bakeries as well as research stations. The list looked endless. These corporations, trusts, cartels, and banking houses, seemed as tangled as spaghetti. Thorby learned that he owned, through his parents, an interest in a company called Honus Brothers Pty, through a chain of six companies. 18% of 31% of 43% of 19% of 44% of 27%. A share, so microscopic that he lost track. But his parents owned directly 7% of Honus Brothers, with the result that his indirect interest of 1/20th of 1% controlled it utterly, but paid little return. Whereas 7% owned directly did not control, but paid 140 times as much. It began to dawn on him that control and ownership were only slightly related. He had always thought of ownership and control as being the same thing. You owned a thing, a begging bowl or a uniform jacket. Of course you controlled it. The converging, diverging, and crossing of corporations and companies confused and disgusted him. It was as complex as a fire control computer without a computer's cool logic. He tried to draw a chart and could not make it work. The ownership of each entity was tangled in common stocks, preferred stocks, bonds, senior and junior issues, securities with odd names and unknown functions. Sometimes one company owned a piece of another directly, and another piece through a third or two companies might each own a little of the other. Or sometimes a company owned part of itself in a tail-swallowing fashion. It didn't make sense. This wasn't business. What the people did was business. Buy, sell, make a profit. But this was a silly game with wild rules. Something else fretted him. He had not known that Rudbeck built spaceships. Galactic Enterprises controlled Galactic Transport, which built ships in one of its many divisions. When he realized it, he felt a glow of pride, then discovered gnawing uneasiness. Something Colonel Brisby had said, something Pop had proved, that the largest, or it might have been one of the largest builders of starships, was mixed up in the slave trade. He told himself he was being silly. This beautiful office was about as far from the dirty business of slave traffic as anything could be. But as he was dropping to sleep one night, he came wide awake with the black, ironic thought that one of those slave ships in whose stinking holds he had ridden might have been, at that very time, the property of the scabby, frightened slave he was then. It was a nightmare notion. He pushed it away, but it took the fun out of what he was doing. One afternoon he sat studying a long memorandum from the legal department, a summary, so it said, of Rudbeck and Associates' interests, and found that he had dragged to a halt. It seemed as if the writer had gone out of his way to confuse things. They would have been as intelligible in ancient Chinese, more so. Sarganese included many Mandarin words. He sent Dolores out and sat with his head in his hands. Why, oh why, hadn't he been left in the guard? He had been happy there. He had understood the world he was in. And then he straightened up and did something he had been putting off. He returned a view call from his grandparents. He had been expected to visit them long since, but he had felt compelled to try to learn his job first. Indeed, he was welcome.
Hurry, son. We'll be waiting.
It was a wonderful hop across prairie and the mighty Mississippi, small from that height, and over city-pocked farmland to the sleepy college town of Valley View, where sidewalks were stationary and time itself seemed slowed. His grandparents' home, imposing for Valley View, was homey after the awesome halls of Rudbeck. But the visit was not relaxing. There were guests at dinner, the president of the college and department heads, and many more after dinner. Some called him Rudbeck of Rudbeck. Others addressed him uncertainly as Mr. Rudbeck. And still others, smug with misinformation as to how the nabob was addressed by familiars, simply as Rudbeck. His grandmother twittered around, happy as only a proud hostess can be, and his grandfather stood straight and addressed him loudly as Son. Thorby did his best to be a credit to them. He soon realized that it was not what he said but the fact of talking to Rudbeck that counted. The following night, which his grandmother reluctantly kept private, he got a chance to talk. He wanted advice. First information was exchanged. Thorby learned that his father, on marrying the only child of his grandfather Rudbeck, had taken his wife's family name.
"It's understandable," Grandfather Bradley told him. "Rudbeck has to have a Rudbeck. Martha was heir, but Crichton had to preside. Board meetings and conferences, and at the dinner table for that matter. I had hoped that my son would pursue the muse of history, as I have. But when this came along, what could I do but be happy for him?"
His parents and Thorby himself had been lost as a consequence of his father's earnest attempt to be in the fullest sense Rudbeck of Rudbeck. He had been trying to inspect as much of the commercial empire as possible.
"Your father was always conscientious, and when your grandfather Rudbeck died before your father completed his apprenticeship, so to speak, Crichton left John Weemsby in charge. John is, I suppose you know, the second husband of your other grandmother's youngest sister, Arya. And Leda, of course, is Arya's daughter by her first marriage."
"No, I hadn't known." Thorby translated the relationships into Sisu terms, and reached the startling conclusion that Leda was in the other moiety, if they had such things here, which they didn't. And Uncle Jack, well, he wasn't uncle, but how would you say it in English?
"John had been a business secretary and factotum to your other grandfather, and he was the perfect choice, of course. He knew the inner workings better than anyone, except your grandfather himself. After we got over the shock of our tragic loss, we realized that the world must go on, and that John could handle it as well as if he had been Rudbeck himself."
"He's been simply wonderful," Grandmother chirped.
"Yes, he has. I must admit that your grandmother and I became used to a comfortable scale of living after Crichton married. College salaries are never what they should be. Crichton and Martha were very generous. Your grandmother and I might have found it difficult after we realized that our son was gone, never to come back, had not John told us not to worry. He saw to it that our benefit continued just as before."
"And increased it,"
Grandmother Bradley added emphatically.
"Well, yes, all the family. We think of ourselves as part of Rudbeck family, even though we bear a proud name of our own. All of the family have been pleased with John's stewardship."
Thorby was interested in something other than Uncle Jack's virtues. "You told me that we left Akka, jumping for Farstar, and never made it? That's a long, long way from Jubal."
"I suppose it is. The college has only a small collectiview, and I must admit that it is hard to realize that what appears to be an inch or so is actually many light years."
"About 170 light years in this case."
"Well, let me see. How much would that be in miles?"
"You don't measure it that way, any more than you measure that couchamat you're on in microns."
"Oh, come now, young man, don't be pedantic."
"Well, I wasn't being, Grandfather. I was thinking that it was a long way from where I was captured to where I was last sold. I hadn't known it."
"I heard you use that term, sold, once before. You must realize that is not correct. After all, the serfdom practiced in the Sargony is not chattel slavery. It derives from the ancient Hindu guild or caste system. A stabilized social order with mutual obligations up and down. You must not call it slavery."
"I don't know any other word to translate the Sargonese term."
"Well, I could think of several, though I don't know Sargonese. It's not a useful tongue in scholarship. But, my dear Thor, you aren't a student of human histories and culture. Grant me a little authority in my own field."
"Well," Thorby felt baffled, "I don't know System English perfectly, and there's a lot of history I don't know. There's an awful lot of history."
"So there is, as I am the first to admit."
"But I can't translate any better. I was sold, and I was a slave."
"Now, son..."
"Don't contradict your grandfather, dear. That's a good boy."
Thorby shut up. He had already mentioned his years as a beggar, and had discovered that his grandmother was horrified, had felt that he had disgraced himself, though she did not quite say so. And he had already found that while his grandfather knew much about many things, he was just as certain of his knowledge when Thorby's eyes had reported things differently. Thorby concluded glumly that it was part of being senior, and nothing could be done about it. He listened while Grandfather Bradley discoursed on the history of the Nine Worlds. It didn't agree with what the Sargonese believed, but wasn't too far from what Pop had taught him, other than about slavery. He was glad when the talk drifted back to the Rudbeck organization. He admitted his difficulties.
"You can't build Rome in a day, Thor."
"It looks as if I never would learn. I've been thinking about going back into the guard." His grandfather frowned.
"That would not be wise."
"Why not, sir?"
"If you don't have talent for business, there are other honorable professions."
"Meaning the guard isn't?"
"Your grandmother and I are philosophical pacifists. It cannot be denied that there is never a moral justification for taking human life."
"Never,"
agreed Grandmother, firmly. Thorby wondered what Pop would think. Shucks, he knew. Pop cut him down like grass to rescue a load of slaves. "What do you do when a raider jumps you?"
"A what?"
"A pirate. You've got a pirate on your tail and closing fast."
"Why, you run, I suppose. It's not moral to stay and do battle. Thor, nothing is ever gained by violence."
"But you can't run. He has more legs. It's you or him."
"You mean he?" "Well, then you surrender. That defeats his purpose, as the immortal Gandhi proved."
Thorby took a deep breath. "Grandfather, I'm sorry, but it doesn't defeat his purpose. You have to fight. Raiders take slaves. The proudest thing I ever did was to burn one."
Burn one?"
"Hit him with a target seeker. Blast him out of the sky." Grandmother gasped. At last, his grandfather said stiffly,
"Thor, I'm afraid you've been exposed to bad influences. Not your fault, perhaps, but you have many misconceptions, both in fact and in evaluation. Now be logical. If you burned him, as you say, how do you know he intended, again, as you say, to take slaves? What could he do with them? Nothing."
Thorby kept silent. It made a difference. which side of the plaza you saw a thing from, and if you didn't have status, you weren't listened to. That was a universal rule. Grandfather Bradley continued,
So we'll say no more about it, On this other matter, I'll give you the advice I would give your departed father. If you feel that you have no head for trade, you don't have to enter it. But to run away and join the guard like some childish romantic... No, son. But you needn't make up your mind for years. John is a very able regent. You don't have a decision facing you.
He stood up.
I know, for I've discussed this with John. And he's willing, in all humility, to carry the burden a little farther, or much farther, if need be. And now we had all better seek our pillows. Morning comes early.
Thor left the next morning, with polite assurances that the house was his, which made him suspect that it was. He went to Rudbeck City, having reached a decision during a restless night. He wanted to sleep with a live ship around him. He wanted to be back in Pop's outfit. Being a billionaire boss wasn't his style. He had to do something first. Dig out those papers that father and mother had signed, compare them with the ones prepared for him, since father must have known what was needed, sign them, so that Uncle Jack could get on with the work after he was gone. Grandfather was right about that. John Wingsby knew how to do the job, and he didn't. He should be grateful to Uncle Jack. He would thank him before he left. Then, off Terra and out to where people talked his language. He buzzed Uncle Jack's office as soon as he reached his own, was told that he was out of town. He decided that he could write a note and make it sound better. Oh, yes. Must say goodbye to Lita. So he buzzed the legal department and told them to dig his parents' authorizations out of the vault and send them to his office. Instead of papers, Judge Bruder arrived.
Rudbeck, what's this about your ordering certain papers from the vault?
Thorby explained, I want to see them.
No one but officers of the company can order papers from the vault.
Well, what am I?
I'm afraid you are a young man with confused notions. In time you will have authority, but at the moment you are a visitor, learning something about your parents' affairs.
Thorby swallowed it. It was true, no matter how it tasted. I've been meaning to ask you about that. What's the progress in the court action to have my parents declared dead?
Are you trying to bury them?
Well, of course not, but it has to be done, or so Uncle Jack says. So where are we?
Bruder sniffed. Nowhere. Through your doing.
What do you mean?
Young man, do you think that the officers of this company will initiate a process which will throw affairs of the firm into incredible confusion unless you take necessary steps to guard against it?
Why, it may take years to settle the wills, during which business would come to a stop. Simply because you neglected to sign a few simple instruments which I prepared weeks ago?
You mean nothing will be done until I sign?
That is correct.
I don't understand. Suppose I were dead, or had never been born. Does business stop every time a Rudbeck dies?
Well, no. A court authorizes matters to proceed. But you are here, and we must take that into consideration. Now see here. I'm at the end of my patience. You seem to think simply because you've read a few balance sheets that you understand business. You don't. For example, your belief that you can order instruments turned over to you that were given to John Wingsby personally, and are not even company property. If you were to attempt to take charge of the firm at this time, if we proceeded with your notion to have your parents declared dead, I can see that we would have all sorts of confusion while you were finding your balance. We can't afford it. The company can't afford it. Rudbeck can't afford it. So, I want those papers signed today. And no more shilly-shallying, you understand?
Thorby lowered his head.
I won't. What do you mean you won't?
I won't sign anything until I know what I'm doing. If I can't even see the papers my parents signed, then I certainly won't.
We'll see about that.
I'm going to sit tight until I find out what's going on around here.